Welcome to the Karen Conti Show on 720 WGN.
Welcome in, everyone. I've missed you. Haven't been here in a while. Been preempted. I hate being preempted. I feel so preempted. I'm sure you have been enjoying your sports coverage here on WGN. But a lot of things have happened. We've had such an interesting bunch of legal stuff going on. As you may know, I'm a practicing lawyer. I've been practicing for 32 years. We talk about legal things here, but we talk about other things as well. We have a really interesting show tonight. We're going to be talking about a topic that's near and dear to my heart, and that is the issue of difficult conversations. Now that the holidays are upon us officially after Halloween, we're going to start singing Christmas carols, holiday songs, I guess I should say. We realize that we're going to be seeing people maybe at the Christmas parties, holiday parties, whether it's work or otherwise, and we may have different political opinions about things, and it can get really testy. I don't know about you, but I have had some conversations that have gone south really, really quickly. And so we're going to be talking to Ray I knew I was going to do it wrong. I said I was going to do it right. Caritzi, who is from the Center for Conflict Resolution. And there is a course, actually, this Thursday, and it's about how to have difficult conversations, how to prepare yourself, how to deal with a situation that is going south when somebody has an opinion that might be different than yours. Because now it's not just I have an opinion and you have an opinion. It's like I have an opinion and you're stupid, which really devolves very, very quickly. And so we're going to learn how to nip that in the bud. And then we're going to be talking to John Fritchie, who is a Cook County Commissioner. He's just a lively guy, really interesting guy. He's a lawyer, but we're talking about political things, really not from a real political standpoint, but really just the upcoming election, the mayoral election. What does it take to be the mayor of Chicago? The most pressing issue of our time on the referendum in Chicago, should we ban plastic straws? And those and other interesting topics we'll be discussing about 7:45. And then around a little after 8, maybe 8:15 or so, we'll be taking your legal questions on any topic you might have. You can give us a call here, 981-7200, or text to 981-7200. I usually try to give you an answer or steer you in the right direction. I want to talk about a news story that I saw literally coming here in a cab, not on a bus. Okay, sometimes I read articles and I say, oh, someone got fired. They're bringing a lawsuit. That's a stupid firing. The guy shouldn't have been fired. I'm usually on the side of the employee. I'm kind of a big advocate. But here, I wonder why these people are not fired. The Chicago Transit Authority has disciplined three bus drivers who were caught relieving themselves on their routes in the past few years, according to CTA records obtained by the Chicago Sun-Times. Now, spoiler alert, and please, you might find something I say a little offensive. They aren't just urinating, okay? They are defecating, and they are doing it on their route. They're doing it on the bus, and they haven't been fired. They've been reprimanded, but they haven't been fired. Now, so in one particular duty... on duty incident in September, a driver defecated on his bus after pulling over, busted by the onboard surveillance camera footage. The driver told his bosses he couldn't hold it because, quote, he had eaten some bad tacos. You know, I guess I just think if that is something now, and it's against the law to urinate and defecate in public, by the way, it's disorderly conduct, probably among many other things. But, and again, I'm not advocating that people get fired, but they should do something about this. I mean, Roger, have you heard of this? Did you read this story? Roger's just, he fell over. Maybe he's doing something too. But can you imagine if we all relieved ourselves on our job? Just think about it. Okay, all of you people, you're sitting there on a nice Sunday. You're thinking about going to work tomorrow. I'm thinking I'm going to be in court tomorrow. Excuse me, Judge. I'm just going to go in the corner and just don't pay attention to that puddle. Judge, Your Honor, please just don't do that. Does that make any sense? If we all did that, life would be really, really bad. Anyway, so let us take a quick break now. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about that difficult conversation. And if you want, and then I think what we're going to do after our guest tells us a little bit about how to avoid these situations and how to handle them, we're going to do, Jerry, my husband and I, are going to do a little mock exercise on what happens during a nice family party, perhaps. We'll use that as an example. When one person is in one extreme and the political side, the other side is on the other side. You know, I'm on the other side, he's on the other side. And what do we do when it starts to get bad? How do we prevent it? And then how do we solve the problem? The Steve Cochran Show is kicking off Christmas a little early. Christmas Pete debuts on Monday at 9:40. Ho, ho, ho. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN.
So let's leave it alone, 'cause we can't see eye to eye. There ain't no good guy, there ain't no bad guy. There's only you and me, and we just disagree.
In the past 2 weeks, even maybe the past few years, maybe even longer, we've experienced some very harsh conversations about topics like politics, race, religion, gun control, and other issues. It seems like in the past we've been able to disagree without being disagreeable, but now that's a hard thing. Things are devolving into name-calling and arguments that are hurtful and sometimes destroying relationships, and I've seen it. There was a 2017 Stress in America survey. 27% of adults strongly or somewhat strongly agree that the political climate has caused strain between themselves and their family members. And with the holidays coming upon us, I want to discuss how to navigate these hard conversations so we don't have turkeys flying in each other's faces. And with us to discuss this I'm going to put your microphone on, is Ray Caritzi.
Perfect.
Why am I having such a hard time?
It's a tricky one. There's a bunch of Y's and I's in there.
Now I get it. Okay. Ray Caritzi, who is with the Center of Conflict Resolution. She's an attorney. She is a licensed and certified mediator, and she's teaching a class on Thursday, November 8th, called Difficult Conversations Workshop.
Yes, exactly.
Who decided? How do you decide that this is necessary? Is it because we all know that this kind of stuff is happening?
Absolutely. The idea for this program, I have to give credit to Perry Karim, our training director. She, exactly 2 years ago now, had the idea that folks might be starting to have some really hard conversations, really in the wake of the 2016 elections, right? There was a lot. It was a really tumultuous time, even in the run-up to the elections. And she had the idea that we could offer a workshop at the Center for Conflict Resolution, CCR, that would really be focused on preparing folks to engage in those conflict, not necessarily those conflicts, but those conversations in a really productive way.
So, you know, is there some idea as to why? I mean, I've heard the talks that perhaps because we have the internet, perhaps because we have news stations that are now very polarized. So if you are conservative, you watch Fox. If you're liberal, you watch MSNBC, and you can hear your own political beliefs right back at you. And if you don't want to hear something that's against what you believe in, you don't have to listen to it. And so we have become very polarized, and we are not accepting of hearing things that offend us or that don't comport with our positions. Is that, I mean, it's hard to say, but is that what's going on?
I mean, it certainly seems like it's what's going on. Media isn't my expertise, but from being alive the last few years and on Facebook, I mean, that definitely seems like what's happening. And, you know, what we do know happens for sure is that humans have a biological stress response, right? Like when we are under stress, which people, right, we always talk about the old saber-toothed tiger, right? That, right, we either freeze or we fight or we flee, right? And I think that what happens a lot when we, like you're saying, right, I can go all day listening only to people that agree with me and stay very comfortably in my bubble. And when I'm confronted with something that I find to be a stressor, maybe someone who disagrees with me or says something that I think is really offensive. For some people, the thought is, I'm going to avoid this conversation. I'm not going to have it at all. I'm not going to go there with her. That sort of a thought, which can be detrimental. And then for other people, it's really like, well, I'm going to fight you now to change your mind, which doesn't work.
It doesn't work, does it? I mean, when it comes to big topics, whether it's gun control or abortion or the death penalty, I mean, no, there's no way that I'm going to change your mind or you're going to change mine about the way we feel about these things.
No, if you and I decided right now that we have really different views about, let's say, gun control, I would not engage in that conversation with you, just like ready to get new data and shift my core belief. But instead, what we can do is shift what we're having the conversation about and how we're having the conversation.
So can you give me an example of that? So you're engaging, you know, someone, you know, you're talking about the shooting at the synagogue in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
And I say, we got to get rid of those guns. They're all so terrible. We should not have guns and Second Amendment should go away. And okay, so
I actually have a perfect real life example for this. So I am a professional in conflict resolution. I'm the programs director at CCR. I'm a mediator. I'm all about resolving conflict. And my sister, my younger sister, for years sold guns, like worked at a gun counter professionally. That was what she did. And we are really different in a lot of ways. And for many, many years, we could not engage in a dialogue around guns, gun control, gun policy without breaking down into a huge fight, right? Without really her yelling, her crying and me yelling is usually our, it's like our natural dynamic.
Well, you're a lawyer. You yell for a living.
Absolutely. I was born that way. Yeah. And she's avoidant. And so, right. But, you know, after years of having unsuccessful discourse, I did a training that was similar to this in thinking about how we engage in these kind of conversations. And really what I'm able to do now when my sister and I talk about guns is recognize that, you know, my sister was the only woman working at that whole gun counter, which is, I think, awesome, right? I'm all about women entering fields that have been historically
male dominated.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and it's like, oh, wait, like we're talking about guns, but we're also talking about this thing that that I think is awesome. And then, you know, once we were able to stop yelling and crying, when we talk about like what sort of measures should exist, we actually agree almost all of the time. It's just that, you know, she has this literal thing she values, and I don't have the same value for it. But when we start talking about solutions, we actually have a lot more common ground when we can stay calm and realize that I don't think that everyone should get their guns taken away, and she doesn't think everybody should get free guns, you know.
And once, it's not as extreme as that.
Absolutely. You know, we have really common values around those things. It just took us years of unsuccessful conversation to start to have some good ones to realize that we actually share some values, and now we have challenging conversations still. You know, I'll say, well, what's this perspective in the gun community? How, you know, what's your response to this? You know,
an intelligent, non-personal discussion.
Absolutely. And then I'm often, as much as I hate to admit it, informed by my little sister, you know, because there's so much about how guns are regulated in Illinois and licensing and purchasing that I had no idea was in place. You know, and she, of course, knows that from it having been her profession. And so we're able to teach and learn once we're able to openly dialogue.
And that's interesting. I'm going to give you an example. In my life, I represented a serial killer in the last set of his death row appeals. And all anyone has to do is Google me and you know who he is, okay? Not a good guy, okay? Really on the list of probably the worst guys ever in the history of the world, right? And as far as murdering. And so I had people who were in my face about the death penalty. And I certainly didn't like go into a cocktail party and start saying, hey, you guys are stupid because you believe that the death penalty is the way to handle this. No, but what I would do sometimes, and people would say, they go through their rant about how I was terrible because I was representing someone as terrible as this guy. And then I'd say, you know what, I did it for the reasons, and this is why I did it. And sometimes they'd say, well, what was he like? You know, because they were interested, but they had to say that. They had to say they didn't like me for doing that. But then they were interested. And when they were interested, I gave them information. I didn't try to change their mind. I gave them facts. And I said one of the things that I believe that is interesting is that the death penalty costs more than putting someone in jail for the rest of their lives. And so, you know, even if you think the death penalty is the greatest thing in the world, you got to think about that cost, because why waste the money on someone who should just, you know, throw away the key, put that guy in jail and just leave them in there, you know? And sometimes I was able to connect with people. But again, it was never, you don't know, I will tell you. It was more listening to their conversation and trying to find a little edge there where I could say, I understand why you feel that way. If it were my kid, I would be in the same position you are.
Yeah.
So it's finding some commonality. And if that may
exactly.
be what you're saying with your sister.
Yeah, we call that common ground, right? When we're talking about conflict resolution and mediation, you know, when folks are in a conflict, if you can find even one small piece of common ground, you can often build a productive conversation from that.
So what if someone starts in with a personal thing? You like Donald Trump, therefore you're a misogynist and a racist. Anyone who likes anyone who likes Hillary Clinton is a liberal, stupid, you know, wasting of money, of taxpayer money, you know, that type of.
Mm-hmm.
So when someone starts doing that and it becomes a personal attack right away, what's the way to diffuse that?
I mean, that's sort of, really when someone's coming right, there's actually sort of two ways that shows up, right? Sometimes I'm looking right at you and I know you're a Trump supporter, and I'm saying Trump supporters, but what I'm really saying is Karen, right? Like,
yes.
There's one way of doing that. And then there's also that thing that happens where maybe people don't realize that there are people in the room who don't think like them.
Yes.
Right? And you're sort of making that generalization. And I think that in both of those circumstances, right, first there's a decision to be made about whether or not you want to engage in this, right? To engage in a difficult conversation, it takes resources, which is why we recommend that you be really prepared to do it. You know, and if you're at the end of your day and all you're trying to do is like check out at the grocery store, maybe you don't have it in you. And,
right.
And if you're making the conscious decision not to engage, that's totally appropriate, but you want to be really thoughtful about where you're doing this work. But if you've got it in you and you think it makes sense, you know, there's probably different ways to start it, and you've got to do what feels natural to you. But for me, I would say, you know, I would open with being really clear about like, I don't agree with that. Or, you know, you can come out, because what's hard is that when you say, make a generalization like that, you've undermined my values.
Right.
Right. And I'm insulted by that. And when you've undermined my values, I feel like I really have to stand up for them. So
got it. So what we're going to do with Ray is we're going to do a little mock Thanksgiving dinner with my uncle, who has different opinions than I do. And you're going to kind of prepare us for it. And then you're going to step in and see if you can nip this in the bud. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show on WGN.
Try to see it my way. Only time will tell if I am right or I am wrong. While you see it your way, there's a chance that we might fall apart before too long. We can work
All right.
it out.
Jerry's going to see it my way. I know it's going to happen. We're here with Ray Carizzi from the Center for Conflict Resolution, and she's a certified mediator and attorney. And there's a seminar coming up. I want to plug it. It's called Difficult Conversations Workshop. It's this Thursday, November 8th. And where is it? Can you tell people how they can get?
Absolutely. It's at the Center for Conflict Resolution at our office, which is located downtown. To find more information about the training, folks should just go to the website, which is ccrchicago.org. There's a lot of information there about this training and other conflict management trainings that people might also be interested in. So I would send them there. They can also call us at 312-922-6464. We'd be happy to talk to them about the training and see if it's what they're looking for.
So Center for Conflict Resolution is a really cool place. It's a non-for-profit organization, and they resolve your disputes for free.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're really excited. This year in 2019, we're going to be celebrating 40 years in Cook County. We provide free mediation services to anyone who wants it in any kind of dispute. So neighbors come to us, people who have court cases, parents who are parenting from separate homes. There can be a legal action or no legal action. We have no income requirement, and our services are available in Spanish as well as English. We're able to do we mediate about 1,500 cases a year. We're able to do that using a core of certified volunteer mediators who dedicate their time to get trained in our facilitative mediation model, and to provide those services for free to the community.
It's a fabulous service. And,
thanks,
you know,
Karen.
It really is. And I've used the service with clients, and the people are very professional. They know what they're doing. They're bringing people together, and they're resolving disputes outside of court, which is what you want to do. I know I'm a lawyer, I'm a litigator, but this is the way to do it. You sit down. It's not always the most pleasant thing to sit down with people with whom you disagree, but the mediators have been trained to do this. I'm a trained mediator myself, so I know that some of the skills that you learn are to calm things down and to bring people together, and it's a wonderful thing. I'm going to go to the text line before we do our little mock Thanksgiving dinner. 847 area code. Thanksgiving. No, let's see. No, this is 773. She says, I say she says, help. Liberal and conservatives are probably going to make little barbs and comments at our Thanksgiving dinner. How can one not speak one's mind if we can feel the conviction of our speech? Tina.
That is a great question, Tina. It goes back a little bit to what I was talking about before the break. That idea of, like, when you kind of come at my values, I feel a real responsibility to stand up for them. And also, that can be exhausting. But what I would recommend, absolutely, is that you recognize what's going to be the trigger for you, right? What are the things you're worried about that are going to come up at Thanksgiving dinner? And which of ones of those are you willing to engage in a difficult conversation with? And which of those things are you not? And sort of know ahead of time for what might come up. We're going to do a little role playing here.
Yes, we are.
But some of the things, very simply, are, you know, taking a break. Right? Just getting out of the space.
And not an alcohol break, I take it. Because that sounds like it's going to enhance the problem.
That's true. It could make it much worse. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and one of the ideas, too, is to try to figure out what the person means by what they're saying. Sometimes we're really flippant and we swear, we insult, we make gross generalizations. But when I do something like that and then you say, what did you mean by they're all stupid, right? And then I have to actually think critically about my perspective and my opinion. And even I'm making the speaker sort of take that pause and think critically about what they're trying to convey can shift the conversation to the thing that's actually happening so that we can get into the really the thick of it, which is where you do the good work.
Hopefully. And even if you disagree on facts, which, you know, we disagree on opinions, but now we're also disagreeing largely on facts and statistics and things that maybe were out there and were there was a true fact. Mm-hmm. Now there are no true facts.
Yeah. I don't have the solution for that, because if I did, I'd be very wealthy and we would all be living very peaceably. But I will say that one of the things that sometimes happens in a mediation is that two people will disagree so completely about what Denise said, right? They'll go over and over and they have very different memories of what happened.
Right.
And sometimes as the mediator, to get them past that, what we'll do is say, can you disagree about this and still move forward? Right. So sometimes when people can't change their position on a fact, there's still a lot of other things that they can do to move forward, to resolve, to make a plan, and they don't actually have to change the other person's mind.
As long as the goal, I would imagine, is we want to walk out of here not arguing anymore, we're not suing each other, having a family, parenting plan, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. That goal has to be probably the strongest of all of the motivations in order to get that done.
Absolutely. And really what you see in the types of situations that we're preparing for here with these difficult conversations is a space where you have a relationship, right? And that relationship is important. And so are these political values. And so how do we balance both of those things without sort of destroying each other?
Sure. Okay. So here's what we're going to do. Jerry, are you ready for this? You're always ready. Okay, here we go. So I'm little old Karen, and I'm going to a Thanksgiving dinner at my family's house. And my uncle, whom I haven't seen for a couple of years, is going to be there. And he sends me these horrible emails. In my view, I'm super liberal. He's super conservative. We disagree on every single item of anything. And he sends me these things knowing it's just going to bait me. So I know he's going to start in with me. I know he's going to start in with me. So, Ray, what do I do? Okay, I just know that Uncle Jerry is going to really stoke it up, and it's going to be one of those things that I could just storm out and just eat my dinner at Taco Bell or something.
Yeah, the first thing you have to do is get prepared for those triggers, right?
Okay.
What's the topic right now? You know,
guns. He's going to go out. He's going to be wearing a gun to the dinner table. I know it. I can see it.
So you have to decide what your triggers are and really sort of plan for yourself, how do I manage stress triggers effectively? That might be slow, deep breathing. That might be making sure you're not sitting across from him. Right.
Yeah,
that, right.
Okay.
There are things that you can do in preparation, literally in the space and literally for yourself. You know, one of the things that that works for some people is all the stuff that we talk about, like when you're getting really angry, right? Counting backwards, thinking about something else, because really what you want to stave off here is the emotional flooding. Right. So biologically, when that flight or fight is kicking in and that's the space you're in and you're just sort of raging when you're full of emotion, you can't get to the part of your brain that you need to have a productive conversation. So you want to stave off being overwhelmed emotionally. And if it's happening, you want to be ready to know what are those indicators for me and how do I take a step back so that I can regain control of myself.
Okay. All right. We're going to the dinner table. I'm opening the door. Knock, knock, knock. Hi, Auntie Jan. Uncle Jerry. Uncle Jerry, I haven't seen you in 2 years. How are you?
Good, Karen. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Are you eating turkey this year, or are you a vegan? One of those liberal vegans?
No, you know, I usually stay away from the meat. I do, but, you know, it's all right. It looks great, doesn't it? Doesn't the food look great here? Look at all that good food.
It looks great. That's why you should eat meat.
Yeah. You know, I haven't done that in a while. You know that.
Meat, maybe we can find you a safe space so you can eat your meat in solitude.
Oh, that's, you know, there's plenty of sweet potatoes and I'll eat the sweet potatoes and you eat the meat. How's that?
Eh, it's weird. Everybody eats meat. Everybody eats turkey. And if you, I promise, if you eat turkey this year, we're going to give you a trophy. How's that?
Okay. All right, Uncle Jerry. Well, anything else you want to say to me?
Yeah, are you still against guns?
Am I still against guns? You saw me on television doing that some analysis on the gun control. In fact, this whole weekend we had 12 shootings, I think 2 deaths. Even though the weather was cold, 12 shootings in Chicago. It's just too much.
Yeah,
don't you think?
All the law-abiding citizens should be armed.
You think so?
There are 500 million handguns in this country already. And hey, guess what dictators do when they take over control? They immediately confiscate everybody's weapon.
Are you really afraid of that?
Yes. Oh. And what I'm really afraid of is our own government.
Could you pass the coleslaw, please? Okay. Is that a gun? Is that a gun you're wearing in your belt, Uncle Jerry?
No. It's not a gun I'm wearing. I wouldn't wear it in my belt.
Okay.
Keep it concealed. That's why I have a concealed carry.
Okay, of course you do. So, okay, well, how's everything going? How are your kids?
Why are you changing the subject? You know, every right you have as an American was won for you by a man with a gun, starting with the Revolutionary War.
Okay. Well, that's your opinion. You know what? You want to jump in, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know,
do you want some sweet potatoes?
I do. I'll take a little turkey too. So, you know, the thing is that it's really clear that Karen's doing a lot of work and bringing a lot of work to this difficult conversation, right? And Jerry,
not so much.
No, you know, but I think you did a lot of things really well, right? So you tried to change the subject, which honestly, it works about half the time. It didn't here, but that most people can read the room on something like that. You know, changing the subject really worked. And you asked a lot of questions, which I think was also, you know, when he was talking about, you know, a concern about dictators, you know, you said, is that something you're really concerned about? And I don't know how genuine your interest was in what his fears are, but engaging that way in sort of the substance of the thing that he's saying can be really productive, right? I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with the idea of interest-based negotiation, right? Which is this theory that when we negotiate, what we want to do is figure out what's important to everybody who's negotiating, and maybe we can come up with a better resolution. And one of the ways that you can also employ that negotiation skill is in how you have a conversation, right? So by trying to figure out what's important to somebody, right? What do they value? What's under what they're saying? You can have a more productive dialogue.
Well, and you can also agree that guns have been problematic. The question is, do we arm people in synagogues, or do we just get more guns off the street? I mean, we both agree that these things are horrible. And sometimes, like I'm looking at a listener, 815 area code, I find the best way to discuss political issues is just to ask why they have the views they do. For example, gun control. I support the Second Amendment. I hunt and use guns. When someone mentions they want more gun control, I just mention that I hunt and I have been around guns my whole life. And then we can reach some sort of, you know, amicable discussion.
That, right. That's perfect, too, because that what that listener saying is they identify what their position is, right? So I'm going to say right away, well, you know, I make it clear I'm not on the same page as you, but then they're talking about what the value is for them and what the experience is for them. And really when you're asking, it's all about that tone of voice, right?
Right, right. What, Jerry, you know, Uncle Jerry?
First of all, those aren't my beliefs, of course, but I completely felt dismissed by her.
You did.
Yeah. And when she dismissed me, that means she doesn't approve of my value, and then she doesn't approve of me.
And what would have worked?
With her. What,
calm down, Jerry. What do you think would have worked to make you feel more engaged with?
Was I condescending?
She kept dismissing me. Mm-hmm. If she would have engaged.
Yeah. So maybe more questions? Yeah.
I think she should have engaged me head on.
And fought said, with you some more?
Yeah.
You think said, so? You think you that know, would have gone well?
I would just have said, you know, I appreciate what you're saying. I disagree with it. Let's move on.
You got personal right from the beginning, though, with your liberal vegan stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that was not a nice way to start. Can we agree that that was not a nice way to start
uncle,
the conversation?
I've been your uncle for 50 years. I know, you know where you're coming from, you socialist.
What's interesting about that is that if I was just going to like break down what I think was important to Jerry in this, it was that he kind of wanted to have a fight. Right,
he like did.
Jerry was hunting for a fight, right? So by kind of, I mean, it seemed like he wanted to engage.
And dismissing me brought the fight on.
It exacerbated it for you.
Yeah,
totally.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So that, good luck in your holiday plans, everyone. I hope it goes well for you. And Ray Kuritzi, at the Center for Conflict Resolution, thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell us once again how to reach the organization and how to attend this Thursday's Difficult Conversation Seminar?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Karen. The Center for Conflict Resolution, you can find us at ccrchicago.org or at 312-922-6464. The Having Difficult Conversations workshop is this Thursday, November 8th from 6 to 8. Head to the website or give us a call if you're interested in attending. We're happy to give you more details.
Thank you so much for joining us. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN.
Look, when it comes to something like Dancing with the Stars, people actually think their vote matters. But a vote in this November's election actually does matter. It could elect people who make our criminal justice system fair and your student loans easier to afford. And by the way, you wouldn't let your grandparents pick your playlist. Why would you let them pick your representative who's going to determine your future?
And that was our President Barack Obama, who was stoking the vote. He was in Chicago, I think, this afternoon. And attending was John Fritchie, our next guest. Hi, John. How are you?
Hey, Karen. Good to be here.
John is a Cook County Commissioner, Chairman of the Information Technology Committee, and since 2010 has represented the 12th District, which consists of most of the north and northwest side of Chicago. Before that, he was a state representative for 14 years, having been elected at the age of 32. He also is an attorney, having graduated from Northwestern University. And he worked as an attorney general for several years. Welcome to the show. I admire all your Facebook posts. You seem like a fun person.
Well, it depends who you ask, I guess.
You've got a fun dog named Smudge. It's funny how we know things about people from Facebook. Like, well, I feel like I know you.
Yeah, you know, and I just left the rally earlier, and it's funny when people say, hey, you know what? It's good to see you in 3D. you know, I think everybody likes, you know, using Facebook and social media. For me, it's been great because, you know, as an elected official, you know, you really kind of break down the barriers that much more with, you know, not just your friends, but the people who you represent. And, yeah, truth be told, the first thing everybody asks me about is how my dog is. So,
and your beautiful daughter. Got a nice dog and a beautiful daughter. So let's just talk a little bit about your history. First, before we talk about you, let's talk about the rally. You were at the rally today. Where was the rally and what was the nature of it?
The rally was down at UIC Pavilion.
Okay.
It was headlined by President Obama, and we had the whole state ticket there and a number of other folks as well. And it really is about the message of getting people out to vote. You know, every election matters. This one matters more than most, if that's possible. There's so much on the line, whatever your ideology is. But there is so much on the line. This country has gotten to a point where, you know, we've entrenched ourselves one way or the other. So this rally was about reminding people what Democrats stand for, what this ticket stands for, the individual candidates, and how important it is to come out and vote if you haven't already. Call your friends, your neighbors, your family, your coworkers. And, you know, I've always maintained, I don't care. I shouldn't say I don't care. However you vote is your choice. But get out there and vote. You know, we've had too many cases where people say my vote doesn't matter or I don't like any of them. Votes matter. And all you need to do is look at what's going on today to see that.
How did President Obama do at the rally? Was he a good speaker and did he rally people to...
Well, you know, he needs to practice his speaking a little bit. No. he's the hometown hero.
Yeah, he is. You know, he's like a rock star here, I guess.
He really is. It's funny. You know, he and I came into the legislature together in 1996. And just to watch the rise that he had really has been something. But he has a way of connecting with people, whether it is world leaders or whether it is the person on the corner. And he really endears himself to people. And, you know, they feel that. And I think that's an important thing. And that's part of his effectiveness as well. So, you know, yes, he had the crowd right where he wanted them.
John Fritchie, we're going to have to take a break. This is happening very fast. But when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about the referendum, about plastic straws, about the mayoral race, the police consent decree, and all those exciting topics. Can you stay with me?
Looking forward to it.
Okay. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back. This is the Karen Conti Show. We're going to be taking your legal calls at about 8:20 or so. So get them ready. You're going to be talking to Ben, my producer, 312-981-7200, or you can text them 981-7200 on any legal topic. I'll see if I can steer you in the right direction or give you the best answer that I can. And we're here with John Fritchie, the Cook County Commissioner. How are you doing, John?
Still doing good.
All right. So we got a lot to talk about. There is a referendum on the Chicago ballot. And what's a referendum? Why should people be concerned about these things? How important are referenda?
You know what? A lot of times these referenda, if we're going to be serious, get put on the ballot with very easy questions. You know, do you support, you know, puppies and sunshine? as a way of keeping more controversial questions off of there. And that's what some of these are. But it's also a good way to gauge the public opinion on things. There's also binding referendum. And one that I'm really proud of, candidly, was 2 years ago I put a binding referendum on there about consolidating the county clerk and county recorder's office into one. And it actually passed 2-1. And we consolidated an office and got rid of a Cook County elected office for the first time in 40 years.
And so does that save money, I would imagine, right?
It will save us millions of dollars every year. After the end of 2019, that office will be gone. And it tells you something about government that the arguments against it were, well, it's only going to save a couple million dollars a year. So is it really worth doing? You know, it was worth doing.
I'd bend over and pick it up.
Right? There you go.
So just to get really basic here, I've heard these ideas that maybe we have the Chicago government and we have the Cook County government, and it's too much government. Is there some overlap, and could there be other consolidation that could maybe streamline government and make it less cumbersome?
Well, there actually is a lot of overlap, and we've tried to streamline that. So shortly after Mayor Emanuel and President Preckwinkle were elected, they put together what was called the Gang of Six that I was actually privileged to be on. They each appointed three people to look at ways that we can consolidate things. Everything from using our size to buy in bulk, whether it's vehicles, whether it's supplies, whatever it may be, providing better health care if we can do that. So in Chicago, it seems like there's a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
But you have to remember that Chicago only makes up about half of Cook County. And so we provide a lot of valuable services everywhere, and the vast majority of our budget is public health and public safety. The sheriff's office, the court system, the hospital system, and these are critical things that fall on the county, not the city.
So let's talk about plastic straws, because that to me is the hottest topic in the world. Is that why are we talking about plastic straws? I understand the environment. That's a good thing. Probably we want to keep the environment safe. But I've heard that other things, like people with disabilities, don't like this.
Well, you know, and it's interesting because, like any other controversial issue, you know, there's going to be people on every side of it. We can talk about the sugar tax or whatever.
Exactly.
So are there good environmental reasons for getting rid of them? Of course there are. The one thing I still haven't looked into, you'll remember probably when you were a kid and I was a kid, you know, we always had those kind of hard, kind of papery, cardboard
kind of straws. Yes, I do remember those.
And now they're starting to go back to those. And so I don't know if those are more expensive to do, if there was another reason. But the plastic straws, you know, especially when you see those stories about, you know, these islands of garbage out in the ocean, you know, we've got to start somewhere. And if it's the straws, it's the straws.
And it's, I've looked at the statistics, 500 million drinking straws per day. And again, that may not be, if you look at all the pieces of garbage out in the world, that may not be a huge percentage, but it is a start. And it's just funny because I was reading that people with disabilities are really opposed to this because a lot of people, they're not going to be using straws for certain drinks anymore. And some people with disabilities can't drink unless they have a straw. And when you're drinking something hot, that doesn't always work with a paper straw. So there's always people who, you know, are going to have an issue with anything you pass like this. I guess you're used to that.
Well, and very few ideas are a one size fits all. So you got to be careful about how you implement these things. But it's good to get the discussion going. And this is another way to do that.
So let's talk about the mayoral race. And I'm not asking you to pick a candidate that you like, but just big picture. Mayor Emanuel is stepping down. He's not going to run for reelection. And people speculate and talk about why he's not. But is there something that you look at what he did and you think he could have done this better and he could have presented himself better to the voters? What are some bullet points, perhaps, that you think that he could have done it to be a better mayor?
Well, I'll tell you what, I believe that he did the best job that he could do. And what I mean by that, he had to make a lot of tough decisions. And, you know, I think he's a polarizing figure from a character standpoint. But
his personality, you mean?
His personality. And people, you know, you want somebody that's going to be in charge and take a leadership role, but they also need to be a little more accessible to the public. But when you go and tick down his list of accomplishments, you know, it's a substantive list.
So interesting. And I think, you know, maybe his personality got in the way of people recognizing that. And I always thought, and I heard this, that he was a little arrogant, that he seemed to be a little arrogant, whereas you have the Mayor Daley, who was definitely in control, and I felt like he was in control of our city, but he kind of had that humility.
Well, you know what? Mayor Daley seemed like a guy from the neighborhood.
Oh, exactly.
And for better or worse, but he seemed like a guy from the neighborhood, mm-hmm. and people could identify with that at least. But at the end of the day, people want somebody who they feel they can trust, but they also want to see the results. In Chicago right now, and I grew up downtown, people have really had it. They've been taxed out, and they feel that they're paying more, they're getting less, schools are on shaky ground, crime is more spread out than it used to be. Obviously, it's concentrated primarily in a couple areas, but it's you're seeing it more and more. So there's a lot of tough decisions to be made. What we really need to demand from the ever-growing field of candidates here are, what are your ideas? Not just how are you going to attack all of the other people or this or whatever it may be, but what are your ideas? How are you going to get us on better economic footing? The city's looking at $1 billion shortfall over the next several years just on pensions. What are we going to do about schools? How are we going to compete in a more global economy from a technology standpoint? How are we going to draw people here and keep them here? So we really need to listen and have ideas. You know, I think that we're going to see a race that probably has, you know, I don't care how many candidates have announced, but I think you'll probably have 9 or 10 candidates on the ballot at the end of the day. And I want the voters to be able to hear what they have to say. And the candidates are going to have to work on breaking through the clutter. There's a lot of voices to listen to.
Right.
It's not just, you know, Mayor Emanuel and, well, Congressman-elect Garcia. You know, when it was Ramen Chewy, you had two people to square off against each other. When you have 7, 8, 9, 10 people, they're going to be, you know, battling a lot to get the people's attention.
Now, just apropos, I've got a lot of things I want to talk to you about, but you were on the special investigative committee that oversaw proceedings leading to the impeachment of Rod Blagojevich. Rod Blagojevich got a 14-year sentence. You're a lawyer. You understand the system. What do you think of the sentence, and what do you think, and I'm going to ask you some questions about the long-lasting effects of the Blagojevich regime.
There is no question that the sentence was an extremely harsh one, and that it was as much about sending a message as the underlying offenses. That being said, I'm not sure that the former governor did himself any favors by all but taunting the judge and the prosecutors and the entire system. Listen, you know, I'm not the judge there, but I think that it would be safe to say that former Governor Blagojevich probably tacked a few years onto his own sentence just through his demeanor at the whole through the entire episode and a lack of contrition through the entire episode. But there's not a question. You've seen people do things that are arguably far more heinous who have gotten less time.
Absolutely. And we're still waiting for the Trump pardon because we heard that for a while and now it's kind of died down. So maybe that still will happen. We'll wait and see. As far as, but I always have to ask people who are in the political realm, we see a lot of corruption in Chicago. We have for years and years. It's nothing new. But the question always is, why do we keep seeing it? And why it gets prosecuted? It gets prosecuted harshly. Both sides of the table have been prosecuted. Both sides of the governors, Republican and Democrat. Why do you see that? I mean, you're in politics. You were in the state. You were a state representative for 14 years, and you see people who make these mistakes. Why is it? Do they go into politics having this bent, or does the power get to people?
I don't know that there's anybody who went to jail for making a mistake. I think there's a certain arrogance that leads up to these things. People tend to get either enamored of the position, or they start to feel that they are bulletproof in a figurative sense, and they start to take liberties and take advantage of it. And, you know, it's really, you know, at this point, it's hard to conceive that people still do this because, you know,
right. That's what I mean.
Like, the public doesn't turn a blind eye. Justice doesn't turn a blind eye to these things anymore. And there's really not a whole lot of sympathy here, especially when people are struggling. Not that it's ever a time to be justified, but, you know, how many times do you have to get the message before you say, enough, we have to stop this?
John, we're here with John Fritchie, who's Cook County Commissioner. You've been a Cook County Commissioner. You've been involved in the state legislature, and you ran for the House of Representatives in Congress. So you kind of have dabbled in all of these national, local politics. How do they differ? How does being a politician, being a legislator, and representing these different groups, how does it vary? Which do you like the best?
Interesting question, because people used to ask me if I liked being a representative better or a commissioner better. I truly believe that you can actually get more done to affect people's lives in Springfield than in City Hall or in Washington, at least in the short run. Because, you know, down in Springfield, you're dealing with everything from education funding, tax policy, women's reproductive health, responsible gun ownership laws. And so you're having an immediate effect from a budgeting standpoint, whatever it may be. In Washington, it's a longer term view and it's a longer term gain before you can get something done as an individual legislator. Now, I finished second in a 13-person field to Mike Quigley, and I've got to tell you what, Congressman Quigley does a fantastic job for two reasons. He's in the center of everything that's going on in D.C. right now through his position on the Intelligence Committee, yet you will find him out in his district on a regular basis visiting local businesses, local schools, et cetera. But it's when you're talking about things that people notice on a daily basis. Like I said, I think it's Springfield, but if you go in your neighborhood or most neighborhoods, more people will know who their alderman is than
right.
their state legislators, because if there's an issue with a pothole or something else, or they're upset about the plastic bag tax, and their alderman is kind of within arm's reach. So it is different, but at the end of the day, it's about answering to your constituents, but smaller, right? So at a ward, you got 50,000 people. When I was a state rep, that's 100,000 people. County commissioner, it's 300,000 people. Congressional districts, twice that size. So, it's a more intimate feel, the more local you are. But at the end of the day, it's about, recognizing what your constituents want, and you really are the eyes, ears, and voice for them.
Now, you chose politics in the political realm to focus your law degree to some extent. You worked at the Attorney General's office doing consumer stuff, and you have done a lot of consumer things as a legislator and as a commissioner. What is it that you like about being a commissioner, about being in politics, and what's the best thing and what's the worst thing?
Candidly, the best thing would be the amount of things that I've learned. whether it were agriculture issues, technology issues, whatever it may be. I've met people from around the country, from around the world. I've sat with presidents and been exposed to things and had a chance to really make a difference. Now, you know, my 22-year career is coming to an end in a month, for the time being at least. But when I look back, when I started my job, my daughter was a month old. And I said, I want to do this job in a way that's going to make her proud. She was with me at the rally today. The president stopped on his way out to say hi to the two of us. And when I look back at a legacy, is not really the right word, but the laws that I've changed and the people who I've impacted, hopefully in a positive way, who I've never met. That's a really blessed opportunity to have. As far as the downside, you know, there's not everybody feels that way when you're an elected, when they're elected officials. And so you do see some people phone it in, and that's upsetting, because it really sours the public's view on elected officials. And, you know, there's a lot of folks that don't think of us much better than, you know, the cable guy or a car salesman. And I'm probably giving them a bad name now. But, you know, that's what it comes down to. But it's really the ability to affect people's lives. You know, I always thought of myself from the beginning till the end of my career as the kid that didn't belong. You know,
why was that?
You know, my mom is a Moroccan immigrant. We lived briefly in a trailer park. I went through high school, college, law school on hardship scholarships. And I truly, you know, I ran because I felt I owed something back to my mom, to society, whatever it might be. And I think that's the way it should be. But, you know, traditionally, that's not where you see your elected officials coming from. Now, the good news is you are seeing more people coming from more different walks of lives.
You are. You're seeing a lot of I have a house in Wisconsin. A lot of people are firefighters and policemen. They're running for office. I like that.
And that's what it's supposed to be. When I got to the legislature, I would say that maybe 40% of them were lawyers. Now I think it's less than half of that. And that's a good thing. You want farmers. You want stay-at-home moms. You want people that come out of the business community, whatever it may be, out of labor, to bring those voices. You want a citizen legislature.
Raising money, is that just a terrible part of your job, or necessary evil?
God-awful.
Yeah, I would imagine. The amount of money you have to, especially the higher you get, you know, the stats on how much you have to actually bring in every day in order to keep your job.
Well, that's right. And then people decry the system, but that's how it works. We were talking earlier, I have never seen so many state legislative races on Chicago TV as we have this season. The amount of money is staggering, and that's what's really unfortunate. We are now getting the diversity of candidates into the field. We now have to get a diversity of incomes into the field as well. We can't just have millionaires. We can't just have people who are funded by millions from the local parties. We need to level the playing field so people can get their message out, whether that's public financing. I don't know how we go about doing that, but it's going to be very discouraging to a lot of qualified people if they feel that they can't have a shot at public service unless they have access to unlimited funds.
What do you say to people who say, no one who's any decent person would go into politics? And let me just start by saying, I was from Berwyn, so I didn't grow up with any money at all and put myself through college and law school. And I always wanted to be a politician because I grew up with the Kennedys as being the people who I looked up to. And I loved Judy Bar Topinka, who was from my neighborhood.
Everybody loved Judy.
You know, she was a common sense person. And she was my role model, really. And when I sort of got into law school and I realized the political life just seemed like so horrendous, and even now it's even worse, I don't have thick enough skin for that. I just don't. How do you encourage people to take that step when you know that you're going to be criticized? Just look at the things that you see on the newspapers and the ads. This person denied hearing aids to young children. You know, the most horrible things people are saying.
You should see my last campaign. no, it's true, though. And I think one of the things to incentivize these folks and the good people is other folks are going to run. And if we want to stop people who have a worse message, we need to have people who have a better message. And so, you know, it gets rough and tumble. It is personal. They'll come after you. They'll come after your family. And it's an unfortunate thing. But, you know, it's a sacrifice, and people have to be willing to make that sacrifice. You know, to be candid, you know, I'd have a much easier life you know, had I stayed in the private sector the whole time, then, you know, having spent 20 years in the public sector here. But it was a willing sacrifice. You know, I've never complained about it one time, but people have to understand what it entails. And that it's not all glamour and, you know, press conferences and fun things. You know, there's a lot of rolling up your sleeves. There's a lot of late hours. There's a lot of community meetings. But these are the things that go with the job, and they should go with the job. You know, I've always strayed away from using the term politician and always referred to myself and others as public servants. You know, it's not a semantic issue. That's really what you need to be. You should not run for office because you want to be a politician.
Right.
You should run because you want to be a public servant.
If you were to give advice to a young person or someone maybe not so young who's thinking of entering a race, whether it's a mayoral race or some race, how do you prepare yourself? Like if you started at the beginning, if you were to go back, I mean, you had a very interesting background because you were born in Louisiana and your family was from Central Illinois and you went to Latin school and you went to law school. So you have all these different pieces. How would you prepare someone from age 10 to be a public servant? What are the traits and what are the skill sets?
The kid at age 10 who's able to get away with everything because they can con their parents, there's your next elected official. I think what you want to do is talk to people when they're a little older and say, you know, why do you want to run? I've seen people tell me that they want to run for office. I say, why? Well, I think it would be great to know. I mean, no, what are you going to bring? Why do you want to run for office? What do you stand for? If you can't articulate why you want to run and what you want to do, you know, that should just be the end of the equation right there. You also need to be involved in your community. Understand the neighborhoods and the people who you want to represent, what they need, what their interests are, what they're about, and whether you feel that you can be a good advocate for them. But you really have to have passion more than anything else. Otherwise, you know, it's going to be more of the same old thing.
And not to get super political, I know you're not a huge Trump fan. No one, you know, you just need to look at your Facebook page to realize that. But let's just say, just without criticizing or do anything, how is the Donald Trump presidency, do you think, how is it going to change politics in the future? Is it going to have a lasting impact? Or at some point when he gets voted out of office or he serves his eighth year and goes back to reality television, or how is this going to permanently impact the United States?
Unsurprisingly, it's a great question. It's a two-part question, though. One is how it's going to affect politics. One is how it's going to affect our country. We are at a dangerous, disgusting, divisive, scary time right now. I have never seen the level of hate. I saw it during my campaign. You see it on a daily basis when you see what happened in Pennsylvania. You know, these are unprecedented times. It does look like you're looking at newsreels from the 40s again. And this is a scary thing. So that's the impact he's made. And hopefully we'll heal. It'll take time. How he's impacted politics, though, is he has gotten people to the point where, based on their hate or based on their ideology, they're willing to throw facts to the wind. You know, he can say that he is all in favor of protecting pre-existing conditions for health coverage, yet all he does is try to undo these. He'll tell you that the sun rises in the west, and people want to believe that. Those are dangerous things. That's a change in politics that has to come back. If we don't fix that, we don't fix the country. If we don't fix the country, we're really at a precipice.
John Fritchie, thank you so much for joining me. Will you come and do this again?
Karen, I'd love to come back.
That's great. I love that. We have to think of a name of the segment, like something with Fritchie that rhymes with... No, we're not going to go there. Karen. Not going to go there. Take care.
She's legally blonde and brilliant. Karen Conti, attorney at law, is taking your legal questions right now. Call 312-981-7200. That's 312-981-7200.
Now's your chance to get a little free legal advice. I'll steer you in the right direction or answer your question. 981-7200. The lines are open. You'll talk to Ben. You'll give the gist of your question to him, and he'll get you on the air right away. If for some reason you would like to talk to me at my office or ask me a question with some more detail, or you don't feel comfortable being on the radio, you can always call my office. I'll give you my number. Keep it in your cell phone. Keep it with you, because you don't always need a lawyer, but when you need a lawyer, you really need a lawyer. So, and I'm happy to speak with you. I'm happy to steer you in the right direction, refer you to someone who's a trusted colleague, or if it's something I can handle, I certainly am happy to do that. My number at the office is 312 312- 332-7800, 332-7800, or better yet, you can email me at wgn@askkarenconti.com, K-A-R-E-N-C-O-N-T-I, wgn@askkarenconti.com. Please give us a call, 981-7200. The phone lines are open. I just wanted to say, I know you've heard this over and over again, but please vote. Your vote counts. I think everyone should vote. As they say, bad officials are elected by good citizens who don't vote. So you have no right to complain about what's going on in this world unless you vote. And it's probably the only thing you really have to do. You have to serve on a jury. You know, you have to pay taxes. You may have to serve in the military. Hopefully never unless you want to. But you really, really should vote. And if you don't know where you can vote, go to vote.org. Yeah, www.vote.org, and you enter your address, and it'll tell you exactly where to go to vote. Can't be any easier than that. So phone lines are open. Here we go. Let's go to Tracy. Hi, Tracy. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show.
Hi. I have a question about child support.
Okay.
My children are all adults. My ex-wife is dead, and they're still taking child support out of my Social Security checks.
Oh.
And I wonder who I can call to stop this. I mean, first off, they were kidnapped and were gone for 13 years. I had no idea where they were. I was looking, I had everyone looking for them, couldn't find them. Finally got a hold of them again after 13 years. And when I found them, I also found a bill for $44,000 of back child support. And one of the children listed on the child support is not even mine.
Okay, so there was a court order entered. Where was the court order entered? Was it entered in Cook County here?
No, one was entered in Georgia, and the other one, I guess, was they told me I owed $2,000 in Illinois. I'm in Bloomington, Illinois.
So I'm surprised.
I paid off the Illinois.
Okay.
But there's still, I'm down to $7,000 out of 44, and they just sent me a bill saying I still owe 18.
How are they garnishing your Social Security? Because that's very unusual. They're taking it out of your Social Security?
Yeah, I only get half of my Social Security disability payments. The other half goes to heir, I guess.
Okay.
Because my ex-wife is dead.
Okay. So here's what you need to do, and this is sometimes complicated to undo these kind of things. You go to the county where the court order was entered. I'm going to put you on hold, Tracy. You go to the county wherever it is, and you can usually, and I don't know the system in Georgia, but you can have a printout of what was owed, when it was entered, what payments were made, and you can see where you are in making those payments. Now, your wife is deceased, so probably in Georgia, that will stop your child support obligations. I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure that you don't have to pay anymore. So you probably are going to want to go down there and file a motion to terminate child support, because the Social Security, if they're garnishing those wages, garnishing your Social Security, they're not going to do it unless they have a court order that stops them, okay? Because they're under orders to take that money out unless a court says no more. And unfortunately, you're going to have to go down there. Again, the best way to do it is to hire a lawyer. If you can't hire a lawyer because you're on Social Security, maybe there's some law clinic down there or free legal services that will help you do this. Unfortunately, for men in your situation, women usually, if you're trying to get child support, sometimes there are lawyers who will help you get child support, but it's not always easy to find an organization that will help you terminate child support. So I would say, again, look at the county where the order was entered. You're going to have to probably find the records of that order. You're going to probably have to file a motion in court to terminate support, and then you're going to take that court order and you're going to submit it to the Social Security Administration to terminate those payments. Again, I'm not licensed in Georgia. I don't know how the system works, but if it's anything like where, like in Illinois, that's the procedure that you have to follow. Interestingly, I had a caller who called in a couple of years ago who said that his children were like in their 40s and he was still paying child support. And his children had children by this time. He was a grandparent. And I said, that can't be the case. Call me at my office. And sure enough, That was the case. And for just for some reason, the records were not being kept correctly and the money was still being garnished from his wages. And he overpaid by thousands of dollars. The judge wouldn't give them the money back, but we did stop the child support. So again, one of the things that I want to say about child support is that if you can't pay it or if you're not paying it, don't think it's going to go away, because if there's a court order out there ordering you to pay child support, it continues and it will accrue interest. And the interest is an incredible amount of money. And I've seen people who may owe $7,000 or $8,000. And when all is said and done, you know, it may be up to $30,000 or $40,000 with all of the interest and penalties. And so it's one of those things that if you've got a support order against you, you need to go to court. Hiring a lawyer is very expensive, but also paying a judgment is also very expensive, and it doesn't go away. It's something that you can't discharge in bankruptcy. It's something that will stay with you and would prevent you from, you know, maybe getting a job. People look at your records and may prevent you from getting a mortgage. And someone at some point may come and try to collect it and take away your car and take away your bank accounts. So please make sure that you take care of those things and you don't just let them go, because they're not going to just be let go. And interestingly, I have a caller from this week from Carol Stream. It's a similar kind of question, but she said, Carol from Carol Stream said, my ex-husband was ordered to pay maintenance for as long as he's working. He lost his job and started a new one that pays about $25,000 less per year. He lowered his maintenance, so he's paying about the right amount. What should I do? Am I entitled to the old amount if he didn't go back to court? And this is almost exactly what I was talking about. So maintenance is not child support. Maintenance is to maintain, it's alimony, formerly known as alimony. So the husband was supposed to pay maintenance based upon what his income was. Well, so he lost his job. Even though he lost his job and he would be entitled to a reduction in maintenance, probably, if the court found that that was appropriate and that his job loss was not his own fault and that it was an appropriate job that he took, he would be entitled to have that reduced. But if he just reduces it voluntarily, he's violating a court order. So the court order is in place until it's not. So the problem is for Carol's ex-husband is that even though he's paying what he probably should be paying, he's still going to owe that old amount. And that old amount is going to accrue. And again, it's going to be a judgment at some point if Carol comes to go to court on it. And it accrues interest at 9%, which is an incredible amount of interest. And so at that point, that could be a serious problem. So again, whether you're paying it, whether you're receiving it, let's take it the other way. Say that you are receiving child support and you know that your ex is now making a lot more money. You don't automatically get that extra money for child support unless you go back and ask for an increase. So always make sure you do that, and make sure that sometimes the state's attorney in your county does that for free. Sometimes you have to hire a lawyer and you have to always guess, you know, or at least estimate whether it's going to be worth it to pay a lawyer to go to court to have this done. And if it's just a little bit of money, you might say, I'm not going to go back to court. I'm not going to engage in litigation. I'm not going to hire a lawyer. I'm not going to spend the money. It's not worth it for me to get that small amount. Sometimes it is worth it. And it depends a lot on, is it collectible? Is there a job where you can garnish the wages? Are your children young? Do you have a lot of years left of child support that maybe you know, it's going to amount to a lot of money in the long run. So, and those are all issues that you face as a parent. Also, the issue, of course, of college. It's when you reach the college age, you can try to get your spouse to pay for a portion of college expenses, which have become so incredibly expensive. It's not like kids can put themselves through these days. So that's something you also need to talk about with an attorney and see if it's worth it for you to bring those kinds of motions in court, or, you know, really, hopefully, call up your ex and try to work it out. I always say, try to work it out before you hire a lawyer. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, if you have any legal questions, please give me a call at 981-7200. Otherwise, I have a little quiz. It's called a midterm exam. So it's a quiz about voting rights. It's about voting. So if you think that you're a hotshot and that you know a lot about voting, call me. The second caller will be put on the air, and we're going to do a little quiz on your knowledge of voting. 981-7200, 981-7200. Give us a call. Ben, second caller, will be our guest on The Karen Conti Show. You're listening to WGN. Do we have someone to play my voting game, my midterm exam game? Ben, is that a caller that I have here? It's quiet tonight. People must be kind of cocooning and sitting in and drinking hot chocolate. Do we have someone to play the game? If not, we're going to play it with Roger. Roger, we're volunteering you.
I've been volunteering. Wouldn't be the first time.
But you don't. Okay. All right. Well, so I think my husband Jerry, and I think Roger Badish are going to play my midterm voting game. Okay. All right.
This will keep me on my toes because I've got a lot of reporting about this stuff to do. So
yes. Well, let's just see how you do. Okay. All right, Jerry, you ready?
Yep.
You got to talk right into the microphone. Right in closer. There we go. Okay. All right. Here we go. Let's just ask this question. Today, November 4th, is the anniversary of what historic voting day? A, the first day women got the right to vote in 1920. B, the first African-American president was elected. C, poll taxes were outlawed in the United States. Or D, the electronic voting machine was patented. So women got the right to vote in 1920. Mm-hmm. Today, November 4th, first African-American was elected as president. Mm-hmm. Poll taxes were outlawed or mm-hmm. the electronic voting machine. Roger, I'm going to take your answer first. And you better not be Googling there.
No,
that's
no,
cheating.
Not at all.
Cheating.
My hands are above my head.
Okay.
I'm not. Nothing up my sleeves. I'm going with B, first African-American president elected.
Jerry?
I didn't know that women had the right to vote.
Oh.
Hello.
Are we still playing Uncle Jerry at the dinner table?
Are.
Oh,
yes,
my
are.
Gosh. Here we go. Here we go again.
The voting machine was patented.
Oh, Jerry, I'm so sorry. Roger, we're going to have to give it to you.
Thank you.
Today, in 2008, Barack Obama was elected as the first African-American president. You know, I had a listener, a texter who said, why are we gushing all over President Obama? What did he do? He had high unemployment, blah, blah, blah. Why do people gush all over Barack Obama? I suppose it's your politics. If you like his politics, you like him. If you don't, you don't like him. I just happen to think that he's really likable. I mean, let's just say you hate his politics, you hate his liberality, you hate all of that stuff, and you don't think he was a good president. Am I wrong? But is he just really likable?
Yeah, I think he's really likable.
What do you think, Roger? Aren't you allowed to say that because you're supposed to be a neutral?
I'm supposed to be a neutral person, but I can comment on the likability of people. Yeah. I think I like him as a person that you would want to sit down and talk with.
Right. Good family guy.
With the coverage that I've seen, I've never met the guy personally, but from all the coverage that I've seen, he's either extremely scripted and trained, or he's just naturally a nice guy to sit down and have a beer with.
Whereas, I will say this, I respect Hillary Clinton. I actually spent time with her one-on-one, and I thought she was very charming one-on-one. But I think she's very unlikable when she's, when I see her on campaigning or whatever. And I like her. And I like her, I think she's smart. I think she's qualified. Oh, okay, we have a caller who wants to play. So you guys are now... No, you're off the hook. Look at Jerry. He's throwing down
his... Are we in the bullpen? We're going back to the bullpen, Jerry.
Okay. All right. Let's go. Hi, this is the Karen Conti Show. What's your name?
Hey, Karen. My name's Mike. How are you tonight?
Hi, Mike. All right. Are you ready to play? You're a little late, so you didn't get the first
sure.
one, but we can just jump in. Okay? Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. I just figured somebody else would have called in ahead of me, so I didn't even try.
It's been really quiet tonight, but here we go. Okay. What group of voters, what age group of voters votes the most? Okay. A, the 18 to 29-year-olds. B, 30 to 44-year-olds. C, 45 to 59-year-olds. Or D, 60 and older.
I'm going to go with C.
45 to 59, I'm very sorry. Mike, it's the 60 and older voters. 58% of all people 60 and older vote. And the least amount of people who vote are the 18 to 29-year-olds. And only 20% of all 18 to 29-year-olds vote. That's surprising, isn't it?
Well, I'm not so surprised about the younger ones,
right.
I'm trying to get my kids to vote, but I'm almost to the 60 point, and I vote all the time.
And it's interesting because people who are 60 and older, I'm not saying 60 is old because God knows I'm almost there myself. It's, it's harder for people who are older to get out and vote, and yet they're doing it. It's just, I suppose it's you get to that age and you see the things that are going on and you become a little bit more conscious of that.
Or you're sort of used to doing it.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's it. I just always was raised with, as soon as you're able to vote, you vote. And there was no ifs, ands, or buts. There was no, whether you had to tell your boss you're going to be late or whatever it is, you have to vote. It's a necessary part of being a citizen.
Yep.
Okay, how old do you have to be to vote? This should be an easy one.
18.
That's correct. And this is for extra bonus points. It was changed in what year? Can you give an estimate on when it was changed from 21?
I'm going to guess estimate 1970.
Very good. 1971, the 26th Amendment was the first year they got to vote in 1972. It was changed in 71, and they got to vote in 72. We're going to move through these quickly. What constitutional amendment gave women the right to vote? The 15th, the 19th, the 21st, or the 26th? Mike?
19th.
That's correct. 1920, 8 million women got the right to vote and did. All right. What constitutional amendment guarantees the right to vote regardless of race? The First Amendment, the 10th Amendment, the 15th Amendment, or the 19th Amendment? Here we go. Let's go.
15th.
That is correct. Absolutely. Let's see. Which president was never elected as part of a presidential ticket? John Adams, Andrew Johnson, Lyndon Johnson, or Gerald Ford? John
Ford.
Adams. That's correct. That's correct. He was he took the presidency after Nixon resigned and was not elected again, whereas Lyndon Johnson took it from Kennedy, but he was elected. I think he ran against Barry Goldwater, if I'm not mistaken.
64.
Yeah. Why do we vote on Tuesday in early November? A, to ensure the election occurs before Thanksgiving. B, to ensure farmers could vote. C, so newly elected officials could start the fresh new year. Let's just do those three.
I'm going to say B, but I really have no reason for it.
It was because to ensure farmers could vote, and it wasn't market day, so it was a Tuesday, not a Wednesday, and people had to travel great distances to vote, and they wanted to make sure all the farmers could. I'm going to do one really, really quickly here. The ballot is stronger than the bullet. Who said that? Barack Obama, Abraham Lincoln, Malcolm X, or Johnny Depp? The ballot is stronger than the bullet.
I like Johnny Depp being in there, but go ahead. Say the choices again.
Barack Obama, Abraham Lincoln, Malcolm X, or Johnny Depp?
A.
It is Abraham Lincoln. He said the ballot is stronger than the bullet. Mike, hold on. We're going to get your address, and I'm going to find something to send to you, okay?
Well, thank you very much, Karen.
Thank
Enjoy
you
your show.
Okay, thank you. And thank you for playing our midterm election.